Great. Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us. This is Brad Woodhouse with Protect Our Care. Hope everybody that's joined us on the call is staying safe, and thank you for taking the time. For the last several years, Protect Our Care has engaged in what we call Medicaid Awareness Month. This is a month where we have spent, this has been, you know, ever since the efforts to repeal the Affordable Care Act failed, but we needed to continue to fight to promote the benefits of the Affordable Care Act and also the benefits of Medicaid. And as part of Medicaid Awareness Month each year, we have emphasized the importance of Medicaid expansion, which has brought the benefits of that program to so many millions of Americans. In fact, 17 million Americans have coverage today as a result of Medicaid expansion, which was part, of course, of the Affordable Care Act. But not every state has expanded Medicaid for a variety of reasons, many political. But now we face a crisis, a coverage crisis, people who are losing health care as a result of the coronavirus pandemic, people who need health care, going forward. And Medicaid is such an important part of that and such an important lifeline. And Medicaid should be expanded in the remaining dozen or so states that haven't done it. That would bring health care coverage to millions of additional people. And fortunately, we have a great lineup here of people who are invested in this issue and working on this issue and working in Congress to incentivize and to provide incentives for the remaining states to get off the dime and during this important period to expand Medicaid to the millions of additional Americans who could benefit from that. And so I'm proud to be joined on this call by Senator Doug Jones of Alabama, Representative Colin Allred, one of our fabulous freshmen of the 32nd Congressional District in Texas, and Andy Slavitt, who's the former administrator for Medicare and Medicaid under President Obama. And Senator Jones and Congressman Allred come from states that have not obviously expanded Medicaid, and Andy comes from a state that has, and the additional experience that he has in administering this program and being part of the rollout and implementation of the Affordable Care Act and Medicaid expansion. So I'm proud to be joined by all of these folks. And with that, let me turn the call over to Senator Doug Jones of Alabama.
Brad, thanks so much for having me participate in this panel with Colin and Andy today. It is such an important topic for the country, but especially in states like Alabama and Texas and all of those, I think it's about 14 states that have not expanded Medicaid, that we try to now, this pandemic has really shown a spotlight or put a magnifying glass on all the disparities that we see around the country, but especially those states that have not expanded Medicaid, because our rural areas, our underserved communities, those are the ones that are suffering the most when it comes to healthcare and healthcare options. You know, Brad mentioned a lifeline at Medicaid. Medicaid is so important to Alabama. Our children, 46% of Alabama children, 46%, almost half of all the children in the state of Alabama rely on Medicaid for health insurance coverage. We get about $4 billion annually. Medicaid supports about 67% of Alabama's seniors that are in nursing homes, and about 25% of all Alabama seniors and people with disabilities. So you can see how important that is to people in my state. Now, we have ever, for the last 3 years, I've been pushing for a Medicaid expansion. And our state hasn't done that. I think it hasn't done it in part because of politics. There's always a pushback politically right now with healthcare. I also think that at one point they were really concerned about the cost. Alabama has very restrictive Medicaid requirements. But if we were to able to right now expand Medicaid, and I know Colin and I both are working on ways to try to give our states incentives to do that. There's a couple of opportunities I think we have here, but in Alabama alone, if we were to expand Medicaid, some 300, I've seen the numbers anywhere from 340 to 370,000 Alabamians would get health care coverage that would need. Now, that would include a lot of kids, a lot of children. And these are folks that are falling through the cracks. They're people that are not eligible for Medicaid right now because of Alabama's restrictive requirements for Medicaid eligibility. And they're working folks. Overwhelmingly, the folks that would benefit from Medicaid expansion are hardworking people in Alabama. They just don't make enough to really afford good health care insurance. They may be buying some of these junk plans that the administration has been pushing lately, and that's not going to help them very much. And they make too much to be eligible for Medicaid, but they don't make enough to get good health care coverage. But they're hardworking folks, and that is something that's really important. So we've got a lot of people that would pick this up. I think it would bring a lot of money into the state of Alabama and an economy that will need it, especially in the healthcare field. And also think it would save the state a ton of money in our prisoner population. We've got now, we spend a lot of money with prisoners who are, once they go outside a prison facility, that would be eligible for Medicaid. And importantly, when they get out of prison, they would be eligible for Medicaid. And we keep people healthy. You know, everything that we have seen anecdotally shows that when states that have expanded Medicaid have better health outcomes, they have better economies, and that can't do anything but help everybody across the board. One of the things, and I think I forget who it was that said this the other day, Andy, it might have even been you when we had a call the other day with some of my colleagues, that the thing that this pandemic has really brought home to people is that our health is dependent on our neighbor's health more than we like to have thought about in the past. Their health is dependent on our health, and our health is dependent on theirs. So there's some real opportunities here. The final thing I would say is that while I appreciate Secretary Azar trying to take some of the money from the CARES Act to deal with people who are uninsured, I think it is, in effect, robbing Peter to pay Paul to do that. Our healthcare industry right now is under siege. We're going to have to spend a lot of federal dollars already making sure that they remain solvent and that people get the care that they need. So expanding Medicaid when we can do it, it's all federal dollars. It's going to be coming out of the same United States Treasury, or actually borrowing it, I guess, but it's the same thing. So expanding Medicaid would allow us to continue to put money directly into hospitals and let the states and let folks that are uninsured have this coverage right now. So we're going to continue to push for that right now. It's such an important thing for my state, and I'm hoping I can get it across the finish line in the Senate and the House so that my state will take advantage of it. So with that, Brad, I appreciate this opportunity. I'm looking forward to any questions that you guys might have. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Senator Jones. With that, let me turn it over to Congressman Colin Allred of the 32nd District in Texas.
Well, thank you, Brad, and so happy to be on the call with Andy and Senator Jones, and I want to thank Protect Our Care for their tireless advocacy for this issue. I think it's at the forefront of our national conversation right now, and there's no better time for us to discuss this. And I represent Texas, where I was born and raised. I was raised in Dallas by a single mother who was a public school teacher, and Texas has the highest uninsured rate in the country, as many people know. And one in four people in my home, Dallas County, don't have health insurance. And expanding Medicaid for us was a good idea before COVID-19. And now during this crisis, I think the stark inequities in our healthcare system have just been exposed even more. You know, Latinos and African-American communities are disproportionately likely to be vulnerable to this virus, as we have seen. And many of those same communities are also the ones that are disproportionately harmed by our inability to expand Medicaid in Texas. Hardworking Texans in our hospitals and our local governments do need a lifeline now more than ever. And we could expand coverage in Texas, and the numbers here are almost hard to believe. We could reach 1.2 million Texans with health insurance if we expanded Medicaid. Some estimates have the number being even higher. And there's no doubt that we have unique needs in Texas with a diverse population. We're both rural, urban, suburban, and urban healthcare systems. But despite our challenges, we really have no excuse to not act and strengthen our healthcare system by expanding Medicaid. 26 rural hospitals have closed since 2010 in Texas, according to the Texas Tribune, in part because of our failure to expand Medicaid. And as Doug mentioned, the outcomes are proven. You know, Medicaid expansion does lead to healthier people and does boost the local economy and our statewide economy. And I think this has come into focus for me recently, as many North Texans have called my office worried because they're seeking to apply for unemployment benefits. They've also lost their insurance and cannot afford COBRA insurance. And so now more than ever, we need to talk about this and push to expand Medicaid to create jobs at a time when hundreds of thousands of Texans are losing them and provide a backstop to our healthcare coverage for many working people who desperately need it. And this should not be a partisan issue, and it's not a partisan issue for ordinary people. It's about healthcare, it's about their neighbors, it's about getting access to the care that they need. That's why since day one in Congress, I fought to protect the Affordable Care Act. On my first day in Congress, actually, I introduced a resolution to defend the Affordable Care Act in court against this partisan and cynical lawsuit that's seeking to declare it to be unconstitutional as we speak. And as Doug mentioned, I'm also working on legislation, the co-sponsor of a bill that's been introduced by Mark Vesey to incentivize our states to expand Medicaid. And we have to keep the promise to our people to protect them and give them the care they need. And to expand Medicaid makes more sense now than ever. And I'm happy to take any questions and talk about it. But thank you all so much for raising this issue, for talking about it. It's critical for Texas, critical for Alabama, and I think it's critical for our country.
Great. Congressman, thank you so much, and thanks for your leadership on all of this. With that, let me turn it over to Andy Slavitt. Andy was the administrator for the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid under President Obama from 2015 to 2017. Then he's all around been on top of this public health crisis, and he understands the importance of Medicaid in all of this, perhaps more than anybody else in the country. Andy?
Thanks, Brad. And thank you, Congressman Allred and Senator Jones, for what you're doing. Just start with what we're facing here. We're facing a very invisible, very lethal virus that spreads asymptomatically to a number of people until it finds the people that it can kill. And it spreads around communities and around the country in a way that people are either asymptomatic or they're pre-symptomatic, or even on surfaces. This is one of the most clever viruses ever. It knows no difference between Democrat or Republican. It just keeps moving until it finds the people that it can do the most damage to. And that's going to be the case for quite a while in the near term. And as a country, I think we're just coming to grips with and understanding what that all means and what are our tools to keep the most people alive during this time. And you think about it that way, you think about the fact that this is something that is going to be a challenge for our country to manage, and what the tools that we have to adopt are in order to prevent that from happening. You really do, as Senator Jones want to make sure that your neighbors are able to take care of themselves and are able to keep themselves healthy and are able to, at the first sign of a symptom or anything else, to be able to go in and get themselves taken care of. And that's not going to be possible with millions and millions of people out of work, millions and millions of people unable to afford health care. The next point I'll make is, and I think this is, whether we like it or not, we are going to spend the money. We are going to spend the money. We're either going to spend it heroically in the intensive care unit, trying to save people when it's too late, or we're going to spend it planfully by allowing people to have access to tests, primary care, by the way, mental health care needs, which are important at this moment. So one way or the other, we are going to spend the money. I guarantee it. We are already spending the money. And I think we should be beginning to learn a lesson as a country that we can spend less if we keep people healthier, or we can spend more if we wait until they get sicker. The best tool in our toolbox by far is Medicaid, because it's a comprehensive program. It's a simple program. All the states have the infrastructure to implement it. You can just flip it on. And unlike many things Congress does, you don't have to go through a brand new process and stand up new things. So it has the benefit of being simple. Now, I understand, maybe as well as anybody, that Medicaid expansion became a political issue. I understand that even with the data after 5 years that shows that, cancer rates are reduced, that cardiac rates are reduced, that infant mortality is reduced, that maternal mortality is reduced, that payday lending is reduced, that homeownership goes up. I understand that even despite all those things, there's politics attached to Medicaid expansion. And the reason I understand that is because in my last couple of years in the Obama administration, we negotiated with Republican states who wanted to expand Medicaid but were reluctant. And we were ultimately successful with states as like Indiana, like Arkansas, and like Alaska, and understood that the word Obama itself was the biggest problem with Medicaid expansion. So as we sit here today, we have a choice. We can continue to fight the battle of the last 10 years. We can continue to argue over a man who's no longer president, or we can fight the battle of the next 10 years. And the battles that that the senator and the representative just spoke of are the battles of the next 10 years. It's the battle of our public health. It's a battle of keeping people healthy. It's a battle of protecting our seniors, because let me be sure that even though the people covered by Medicaid expansion would not be seniors, the people that they come in contact with would be their parents and their grandparents, and those are the ones we'll lose. Veterans, seniors, people with chronic conditions, people of color. So to sum up, I think this is the kind of tool that is perfectly suited for what we need right now as a country. I would urge anybody who attaches politics to this decision to step back and think about the things that it will take to keep their constituents healthy in the next decade and beyond.
Andy, thank you. And I want to thank all of our panelists. We'll open up for questions in a second. We've seen that let's talk about the politics. The smart politics here in state after state has proven to be support for Medicaid and support for Medicaid expansion. And we've seen ruby red states vote to expand Medicaid in ballot initiatives. We've seen gubernatorial elections won in swing states like Virginia and Maine and other places on the issue of health care, and in Kentucky on the issue of health care and on the issue of Medicaid and Medicaid expansion, and using all of the tools that the current health care law provides to provide people affordable coverage to health care, which is particularly important now. So, the politics, the best politics here is to protect and promote the health of people and coverage and ensuring that people have the coverage that they need going forward during this pandemic and afterwards. And with that, Whitney, let's open up the call to questions.
Great. At this time, if you have a question for any of our speakers, if you could please press *3 on your phone to enter our Q&A queue. Again, if you have a question for any of our speakers, that's *3.
Hey, Brad, while we're waiting on the first question, I'd like to
mention,
yes, you talked about something that is really important, and that is smart politics. I completely agree. Smart politics in this, we've seen it time and time again. Unfortunately, there are so many folks that I think in the states that haven't expanded Medicaid that are still reacting and have knee-jerk politics, and that's not smart politics. And that's what we're trying to overcome. And that's why calls like this and the work you're doing right now to bring this to the forefront and to educate people and to bring this to the public's attention, it helps so much so that those folks who have the knee-jerk politics that we have to deal with in a lot of states will end up trying to see the smart politics involved in this. I think that's the only way that we can really get this thing across the finish line, and calls like this are a tremendous help.
Great. Thank you, Senator. Whitney, has anybody buzzed in for questions yet?
Yep, our first question is going to come from Debbie Elliott at NPR. Debbie, you are live.
Hi, thanks for having this call. Senator Jones, you know, politics aside, these southern states that have not expanded Medicaid are now facing probably the biggest financial hit to their coffers that they've seen maybe ever. So how do you convince them that this is an investment they can afford when their money is not coming in?
It's a good question, Debbie, and I appreciate that. I think it's a challenge under the ways under Medicaid it exists now, where the state, if they opted in today, would automatically have to try to figure out how to pay a 10% match on this. But Andy said it absolutely correct. This money is going to come from the federal government one way or another. We're either going to expand Medicaid and do it in a way that we provide some incentives. And I know, I think Colin is involved in this. I know that we've got a bill, the same act that I've got with Senator Warner, that would give states that 100% match for a period of 3 years. And I know there's one pending over in the House. And it seems to me that if we could take that same act, it's states achieving Medicaid expansion, maybe tweak it some to address the pandemic as it exists right now, but to give states some incentives, that would help. But even if, in my view, and somebody else might could address this better than me, but maybe Andy, even if we aren't able to get that as part of one of these packages, the money is still going to end up coming from the federal government somehow, some way. Whether we do it on the front end with Medicaid expansion or on the back end by trying to provide states a particular money, additional money in which to deal with the healthcare related part of this. What we really want to do is to make sure that people get coverage and they can stay covered, because the problem the states have is not just in this pandemic. It's just like reopening the states. You're not going to be able to flick a switch and all of a sudden the people are going to be fine and we're going to be back to our ways, which were not that great to begin with. We don't know how long this is going to last for people and the healthcare industry. So we're going to need a cushion for a long time. And I'm hoping that we can work out something with our colleagues to give some states the incentives. That's where we get into the politics again in Washington, D.C., of not really wanting to legitimize the ACA. If we can do that and give these states the incentives right now, I think everybody, I may be wrong about this, but I think they would really jump on it, because it would just be, it would be something that they could do without spending a dime for a period of time. And maybe then down the road, if they want to opt out, say they can't afford it, let them do it, but at least let's get it in there and try it.
Thanks, Senator.
And I'll just, the bill that I'm helping lead in the House is the same in terms of the first 3 years of 100% reimbursement. And Doug is absolutely right. What we're trying to do here is incentivize our states to do the right thing. But the numbers are pretty remarkable as well. An economist in Texas has estimated that if we were to expand Medicaid, it would bring about $8 billion into our Texas economy annually, and that over a 10-year period, we would get a 331% return on our investment. I mean, it's almost impossible to think of anything else to be a better investment for us to do at a time like this.
Great. Thank you. Whitney, anything else?
Yep. Our next question is going to come from Ricardo Alonso Zaldivar at the Associated Press. Ricardo, you are live.
Hi. Thank you for taking my question. And I have a question for Andy Slavitt, and also another question for Senator Jones and Congressman Allred. And Andy, last week, CMS Administrator Seema Verma spoke about the racial disparities in coronavirus, really painted a stark picture whereby African Americans suffer disproportionately high mortality from the disease. But we have not really seen, despite a promise by CMS that they would have the data on this out shortly, we haven't really seen anything so far this week. And, you know, who knows when we'll see it. And I was wondering, do you have any thoughts on that? Have you heard anything through your contacts in the bureaucracy about what might be going on? And do you have any pointers on how we could sort of try to engineer this from the outside? And then I have a question for the two lawmakers.
Andy, you want to go ahead first?
Sure. Hey, Ricardo, how are you?
Good.
Good. A couple of things here. First of all, the Centers for Disease Control should be reporting on a daily basis the racial and ethnic breakdowns of who the disease is infecting, how they're infecting them, at what level, and what treatment protocols work. You cannot manage a national disaster based on hearing bits and pieces of information at press conferences. This is not the way to do it. The way these problems will get addressed is if they are put out there, not in occasional speeches, although I am glad the administration acknowledges the situation, but by laying it bare. The situation, I think, is one that was, like much of this, highly predictable. People who live in multi-generational households, people who have chronic conditions like diabetes or insulin dependent, have suppressed immune systems, people who are lower income and don't have as much access to resources, are going to disproportionately suffer, as they often do, as they almost always do in our healthcare system. You know, what we need to see, and what we needed to see, is a plan that comes out instantly to address the needs of these populations, to keep them at home, to keep them fed, to keep them well taken care of, and to help manage these conditions. Again, this is entirely predictable. This is not something that should be a surprise to anyone. So I'm hopeful that the administration has exactly that type of plan. In the meantime, Congress has an opportunity to take the biggest bite out of this by passing Medicaid expansion for the state, giving those incentives to the states, because the one thing we've seen over the last 5 years that has reduced racial and economic disparities, the one thing that has done it in study after study, has been Medicaid expansion.
Great, thank you. Okay, any questions
thank you.
For the Congressman?
Yes, for Senator Jones and Congressman Allred. As far as I know, Medicaid expansion is something that takes time. The state legislature has to act sometimes. The state has to present paperwork to CMS. CMS has to, you know, make sure that everything is fine, and then expand Medicaid. But it's a process that takes several months. So how is Medicaid expansion going to address the immediate needs of this outbreak?
It's a great question, and all I can tell you is this.
Now, who's speaking,
Congress,
please?
This is Doug Jones.
Okay, thank you.
The Congress of the United States passed a $2 trillion package, the largest congressional financial legislation in the history of this United States, and we did it in about 2 weeks, maybe a little bit longer. Right now, you've got the CDC, you've got the FDA, you've got SBA, all overloaded trying to speed things up and putting good old American ingenuity to work to try to get things out faster. I think if Congress passed anything that would expand Medicaid, give incentives to expand, and states started taking them up on it, or even if they just started taking them up on it right now without congressional action, I think that we could get enough pressure on CMS and the states to really get it done. I think things can be done. There can be some waivers. We could do some things to get this in place. I know typically it takes a long time. We're not in a typical time right now, and I just really believe it couldn't be done overnight, but I do believe it could be done quickly, like in Alabama. The state legislature went down to Montgomery one day to get one thing done. They walked in separately, made their votes, and got out. If this plan was ready to go, they could all go to Montgomery, keep their social distance, give it a whirl, get a vote, get out of there. It could be done. It just can't be done overnight. But it's a great question that has to be thought through.
Right. If you don't mind, Congressman, this is Andy Slavitt. But before, if I could chime in just on something that Senator Jones said,
yeah.
If I were going to implement this in a place where we have a national emergency, I would make it effective retroactive enrollment. In other words, if you go into the doctor, the hospital, and you're uninsured, but you qualify for Medicaid, they could instantly enroll you. So while we're waiting maybe the 2 months or 3 months, which I think it might take to get a formal system up and running, you could basically say to everybody in Alabama or Texas or wherever we were talking about that they can go to the doctor, go ahead, and there will be an enrollment process. That is an enrollment. We have a cloud-based enrollment process that we built several years ago. We could just turn it on. And so I think people would be able to feel the effects rather immediately. They'd feel the protection rather immediately that way.
Congressman, anything to add?
Well, I'll just add that in Texas, the governor of Texas could expand Medicaid immediately. And, of course, you'd have to work out the process of how that's implemented, but you can do that with the stroke of a pen. And I have many times called for that to happen and believe that it should happen. And as we're talking about time frames here, I think we should acknowledge that 2 to 3 months, we're still going to be under the cloud of this virus and that we will be for many months going forward, most likely until we're able to disseminate a vaccine as broadly as possible. And so, you know, every month it's going to count. There are going to be long-lasting impacts of this. And the economic impacts that we discussed earlier in terms of the hit the states are taking right now and that the federal government is going to have to be covering are only going to increase as well. And this would address those, the economic impacts, too.
Great. Thank you. Whitney, any more questions?
Yep. Our next question is going to come from Sarah White at AL.com. Sarah, you are live.
Thanks. Senator Jones, do you think there's any way that the CARES funding could be used to cover the match rate that a state like Alabama has to create the program as is without your legislation? Or do you think that there's any other method on the table right now?
Well, yes and no. I mean, I don't want to use a lot of the CARES Act in a way, to as I said earlier, to rob Peter to pay Paul. At the same time, there is going to be more money coming. You know, we're looking at this at the long haul. I mean, there is all manner of, you know, innovative ways that they could probably get to fund this right now if they wanted to, but we're going to have to backfill it anyway. I mean, so it to me, it just makes sense to try to figure out how to go straight up with it and make sure that we can get it done. And again, I'm not the devil's in those details, and I am not a detailed person. Andy Slabbitt might could help with that more than me. But I, you know, Azar has a plan now to use some of the CARES money to help with poor people that are uninsured. That to me is kind of robbing Peter to pay Paul. And I wish we could just focus on Medicaid expansion per se and let the federal government try to fund Medicaid to the fullest extent so that we can keep hospitals, our healthcare providers and all separate as best we can, because they're going to need so much backfill. They're just hemorrhaging money. We're losing so much money in our hospitals right now. It's just stunning. Even in hospitals that are not seeing a huge rise in COVID patients, they're doing the right thing by just, you know, canceling elective surgeries, canceling those things that kind of keep them afloat. And they're going to have to use the money for that as well. So, I keep coming back to what Andy said. It's all federal dollars. Let's just do it the right way and the smart way.
Great. Thank you, Senator. Whitney, any more questions?
Yep. Our next question is going to come from Brian Lyman at the Montgomery Advisor.
Good morning. This question is for Mr. Slabbitt. One of the criticisms I've heard from critics of Medicaid expansion in Alabama is a claim that the people you would insure under this act may not have access to providers because there's a dearth of healthcare providers in rural Alabama. I wanted to ask you, have there been studies of expansion states as to how Medicaid expansion has affected the availability of healthcare providers, like in states that have expanded Medicaid? In other words, has it increased the supply of healthcare providers in states that have expanded Medicaid?
Well, I think the most important part of the answer to that question is it has absolutely increased access to people because even if you had the same number of providers, you have a number of people who aren't able to afford to go see them. And when they do go see them, they can't pay. And so and second part of your question, it does increase provider because what you have is for the first time a number of people that were seeing doctors and not able to pay or not seeing doctors at all of a sudden they're able to get paid something. So it makes more sense for the providers because, you know, as much as they're good people, they don't love giving away a lot of free care. This basically, like it does with rural hospitals, it expands access to care. Is it perfect? No. Does it instantly create all of the needs that people want? No. But I'll tell you this, in the day now where everybody can get access to telemedicine, I should say everybody who has access to some form of telephone or internet. I'm not assuming that everybody in all rural parts of the country do, but for those that do, it is even less important whether or not they have enough physicians in their local town, because given what's gone on with the coronavirus, telemedicine is now freely available almost everywhere. Well, it should be everywhere.
Great. Whitney, let's take a few more questions if any are queued up.
Yep. Our final question for the day is going to come from Jesse Tenner at Nexstar. Jesse, you are live.
Hi, everyone. Appreciate you taking questions. You've actually been able to answer all of mine about Medicaid expansion, and so I was wondering if Senator Jones and Congressman Allred could answer a question about another aspect of healthcare that's political, and that's abortion access. Just during the coronavirus crisis, we've seen in your states, too, a handful of states, including yours, bans citing those procedures as elective. And so since both of your states are now in different levels of the courts, would you just have some sort of response to what we're seeing there?
You know, I don't, with all due respect, I don't understand how that question has creeped into something that we're trying to do to get so many people health care in so many ways. We've got people in this state who are begging for health care. There's over 350,000 people that are begging for health care. As Andy just said, it helps hospitals, it helps providers. That are seeing a lot of these patients now and not getting paid for it. I'll be candid about this. I think that we need to focus on healthcare for everyone. If we can focus on getting healthcare for everyone in the state of Alabama, the abortion rate is going to fall, just like the infant mortality rate is going to fall, just like the maternal mortality rate is going to fall. That's what we need to be focused on as opposed to an aspect here or an aspect there. This is a holistic approach that we've got to give for everybody, and if we can do that for all folks, then I think the other questions will be answered themselves, and we can get better health outcomes. The goal is to make all of this to get better health outcomes for the people of the state of Alabama and for any other state that can expand Medicaid. When we do that, we provide so much more and so much more help to everybody.
Great. Thank you. Whitney, do we have any more questions?
Yep. Our next question is going to come from Bill Hancock at Gannett Media. Bill, you are live.
Yes, I'd like to thank y'all for holding this session so we can ask some questions and get some clarification. You look at the state in Texas, and it says there's about 5 million people uninsured. How many or what percentage do you think of those would become insured under expanded Medicaid? And I live in a rural area where we have 10,000 people in our county, but we have over 20% that are uninsured.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, as I said in my opener, the estimates right now are around 1.2 million Texans would be covered if we expanded Medicaid. And there are some estimates that put it at 1.5 that I've seen, but the numbers are pretty remarkable. And there's a reason for that in Texas. We have disproportionately a number of folks who fall into the gap between, as Senator Jones was mentioning earlier, making too much under the old Medicaid prior to expansion levels, making too much money to qualify for it and not enough, or not getting it through their employer. And so we have a lot of folks who fall into that category. And we are a state that disproportionately is impacted by our decision not to expand Medicaid. So, you know, there's not many things that you can say that you could cover over a million Texans easily under an existing program that would be also affordable and help our economy. And that's why I think it's such a slam dunk for us to do it.
Thank you, sir.
Great. Thank you. Whitney, any more questions?
Yep. We have one more question, and it's going to come from Alex Bolton at The Hill. Alex, you are live.
Hi, Senator Jones. Thanks for the call. On the subject of availability of health care being highlighted by the coronavirus epidemic, do you have a position on whether the funding for hospitals, $100 billion in additional funding for hospitals, should be included in an interim COVID package? Because as you know, disaster relief for small businesses, the emergency disaster relief for small businesses program is running out of money. And of course, some of that money may be needed to be added to that program to address the tornado damage that we saw over the Easter holiday, you know, in the southern states. Do you have any a view on that, please?
Sure. First of all, I completely agree that we got to get more funding for small businesses. I think we're going to, because it, especially if that money goes down to the employees of those small businesses, I think everybody wants to see that, and we understand that that money is going to be running out. I think, you know, from my standpoint, I've always believed that we're going to need to put more money. The big question is, how do you do it and where do you go? We're trying to come up with a couple of other programs to relieve some of that SBA pressure that has been put on SBA as well as the banks, that we can get more money, do it in a more, much more efficient way. So that's number one. It's really important that we get more money. But I do believe it's also important that we get more money, especially in two other areas. One is healthcare. Hospitals that are hemorrhaging money right now because they're not doing electives, they're going to go under. They're going to, sooner or later, they're not going to be able to pay their folks. They're already laying off emergency room folks and people like that. We've got to get more money into the healthcare system and the healthcare industry. And I think you do that in part by expanding Medicaid and using Medicaid dollars to do that in an expanded program. Third area I'll tell you that's important I think we have to do is we have to get more money to state and locals, particularly our cities and counties, who are also under stay-at-home orders across the country, have been under stay-at-home orders, but yet they have been still providing police, fire, sanitation, all those essential services. But yet in the third COVID package we did, they can't use this money, kind of backfill that. They couldn't use it for budgeted items, and we got to help them and prop them up as well. So there's a series of things that really needs to be looked at, and I understand that a fair amount of progress has been made on those discussions this week, that we may be seeing some packages pretty soon. I'm hoping it will include all three of those buckets, and particularly for the SBA, for healthcare, as well as our state and locals.
And so, would you be opposed to moving SBA funding by itself without that additional hospital funding?
It depends on where it is. I'm not sure just yet. I'd like to see hospital funding. The problem that you've got with just doing this piecemeal is that you are postponing discussions on critical funding for hospitals. You're postponing funding for state and local folks. And all this can be done at the same time. Remember, we got this all done initially in about a two-week period. There's no reason. We wasted a week last week with what was going on. There's no reason why it can't be done this way. We'll see how these discussions are going. I think there's been a lot of progress. So let's try to get it all done right now and see if we can do it. The last thing I want to do is to have a whole series of votes back in Washington, D.C. and Maryland, in which they're still in lockdown positions too. We ought to be able to do this together. If everybody works together in good faith and not try to make this political, I think that this can get done.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Whitney, I believe that's the last question.
It is.
All right. Well, I want to thank everybody for joining. Senator, Congressman, or Andy, any final words?
Okay, well, I just appreciate everybody.
Go ahead, Senator.
I appreciate, again, the advocacy here. We're working hard, and I think we're trying to do it in a really bipartisan way to do the best that we can for everybody in this United States as we face this. There's a lot of good ideas out there. A lot of them are being discussed, and I do think that people are putting aside the politics more than they have, and at least in my time in the Senate, in a number of ways. And I hope that we can continue to do that to get this next package that's coming, that everybody knows is coming. Let's just go ahead and get it done. Thank you very much for having me today.
Great. I want to thank everybody again for being on this call. We protect our care. Not that our voice is more important than anybody on this call, but we do support the next package, including health care provisions like incentives for Medicaid expansion, like testing, like requiring a special enrollment period, like reinvesting in navigators and advertisers so people know that they can get enrolled, and a package that includes both our economic needs, our needs for state and local government, and our healthcare needs. So that is one reason we were holding this call, to lift up the importance of these incentives for Medicaid expansion. So with that, I want to thank everybody for joining the call. If you want more information about our efforts, Congressman Aldridge's bill or Senator Jones's bill on Medicaid expansion, please let us know, and we will get that information to you. But with that, we'll end this call and thank everybody for joining.